Blog Talk Radio.
I always see it on Amazon when I go there, and you can get it on Amazon.
simply called An Introduction to the Urantia Book by David Bradley.
Let me make a small correction there. It's called An Introduction to the Urantia Revelation.
Ah, okay, very good. Yeah, we don't want to send people on a goose chase. Introduction to the Urantia Revelation, and David, maybe you'll get a chance to talk about it a little later in the show, but for now we wanted to really focus on your newest book that you've done as a joint venture with Winnie. And I know you both have been studying the Urantia book for more than 30 years, very active in the Urantia community and always present at gatherings. And so thank you both so much for your contributions to the study and dissemination.
And thanks for inviting us.
Well, you're welcome.
We're happy to have you.
Good.
So,
yeah.
So David, you're going to start with a kind of a basic overview of our Heavenly Mother.
Yes, I think it's important to place her in the universe, so to speak. The general cosmology is that there's one creator parent, one divine God, one first source and center, or uncaused cause. And this is a simplistic overview, but the primary manifestation of God is in the paradise trinity, or the Father, Son, and Spirit trinity. And the Urantia book explains that there's a central or very high central universe where the Paradise Trinity resides. In fact, they're located on the Isle of Paradise, which is a pretty high concept. But the local universes, like out where we live, are, I'll get to that in a minute, but I just have to make a point first that God is self-distributed. Just like there's one God and he manifests as the Paradise Trinity, then there are creator sons and creative daughters of the infinite spirit, which are also offspring of God, and they are gods in themselves. And so that paradise trinity, when the Father and Son share a creative thought, they give birth to a creator son. At the same time, an entity forms in the infinite spirit, which is the start of the local universe mother spirit, and they are schooled and they evolve and they work as a pair. So the local universe creator son and his companion, the local universe mother spirit or divine minister, they position themselves in space and create local universes. So they are, in a sense, our godparents, the creator son and the local universe mother spirit. And so that's how to start off, I think, is to realize that our local universe of about 10 million inhabited planets has a pair of gods at the helm, so to speak, and that would be the creator son and the local universe mother spirit. And so we're talking today about the local universe mother spirit here. And I need to make one more point, and that is the Urantia book talks about feminine deity as being those offspring of the infinite spirit. So there's the Father and Son, which are male figures, and then there's the infinite spirit, and all the offspring of the infinite spirit are referred to in the feminine. So our local universe mother spirit is feminine deity in our local universe, and she's also the parent of all the angelic hosts, all the angels. So she's a pretty high person, pretty big.
We're getting a little static in the background, and I'm not sure why. So you know, I don't know if there's anything that we can do about it. Are you on a cell phone, David?
I am on a cell phone.
That might, it kind of sounds like a wind is blowing, or a, you know, if you...
Well, maybe, let me try moving away from my computer, which has a low-level hum going on.
Okay.
Do you still hear it?
No, that's much better. Yeah,
okay,
we hear what you have to say, and so, you know, the clearness of the call is important because you have some important things to say. You know, I key in on your bigness of the Mother Spirit because the Rancher book, of course, says that the Mother and Father of the local universe, he holds time and she holds space, and I've come to think of her as the omnipresent aspect of God. So she is the space. She is the universe that we live in, and she holds that space. And I just love that concept. So, you know, the bigness of the Mother, that really worked for me.
Well, I would
underline that too. About her largesse, that she's our creative womb that we live in.
Yes.
And that we are all part of her family.
Yes, I love that.
That's one of her attributes, is where she is defines our local universe. Her space present is the same as her consciousness, and like you say, it's omnipresent. In our local universe.
Mm.
She's everywhere in our local universe. And she has many attributes, and we can talk about various attributes that she has because some of them are quite remarkable. And not traditionally known. That's the beauty of the Rancher Book Revelation. It provides lots of information previously unknown.
Just before you start on her attributes, David, I'm wondering if this might be a good chance for me to jump in with one of the poems.
Oh,
that
for
would,
sure.
Be okay, like a little prayer that we could open with. I called it Our Mother Love.
Oh, wonderful.
Okay. Divine Mother of us all, sacred is your name. Your family adores you. Angels do your bidding. Worlds are full of your life. Queen of the dawn, your softest pinks across the morning sky touch hearts, bring us joy. Your pulse, your song of love. Singer of lullabies, you surround us with softness, feed us soul food. Work your magic in our curious steps, making our way home to you.
Beautiful.
Oh, beautiful.
Thank you.
Why don't you guys both tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and what motivated you to write this together?
Oh, good. Why don't you start, David?
Well, I had some religious or spiritual experiences, I suppose, before I came to the Rancher Book. I realized that there are, I think it was the effects of angels is what I ran into in my day-to-day life. There's certain, seems like magic when an angel, angels can do magic. They can make people bump into each other and things like that. And so I had an interest in the spirit, you know, the spirit in human life. And then found the Rancher Book, and Winnie and I met, and she's very interested in the Mother Spirit concept in the Rancher Book. And I had this previous affinity for the spirit, so I was being given to writing things. I was quite willing to write a book about the Mother Spirit and do the research. Information about the Mother Spirit appears all throughout the Rancher Book. We compiled all that information by computer searching the Rancher Book and then took the information and turned it into a book. So when you can carry on.
And yes, okay. And for me, I was raised in a very traditional church background, and then about age 20, about there, I turned my back on that. I had so many questions that were unanswered, and proceeded to just carry on without any acknowledgement of spirit in my life until I was in my late 20s when I started searching, and I was reading everything I could find, and one thing would suggest the next thing and suggest the next thing. And then when I married, my husband was a Urantia book reader, and for the first 3 months of our married life, we read a paper every morning. And I was quite taken with all the various names that our mother was called in the Urantia book, and I started making lists of divine minister and creative daughter of the infinite spirit and all of the names. So that was the beginning of my interest, and I grew to realize that her presence was scattered throughout the book, that just as she's omnipresent in our local universe, that she was just a kind of a network throughout the book. And it was kind of a wonderful exploration to really study and learn more about her presence. So that has continued to intrigue me, and my work has been as a counselor, and I'm very interested in embodiment of how we internalize or how we experience, and knowing that she's present in my everyday life has been a tremendous comfort. So I think that's where the poetry started, that I wanted to even feel closer to her presence, and poetry seemed to help a lot. And, of course, it was a tremendous gift to meet David and then realize that he could write and he could research and he could put this all together in such a beautiful way.
And for my part, I probably wouldn't have written the book without Winnie's inspiration or enthusiasm for the Mother Spirit. I was definitely amenable to it, but I think the real inspirational source came probably from the Mother Spirit, but through Winnie to me, and caused me to quit being lazy and just sit down and write it.
That is always the challenge, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, what a beautiful marriage between the two of you in terms of a partnership that, you know, you're an engineer, David,
right.
I mean, you're a healer and a body worker, and, you know, it just seems like it's just the most beautiful fit. It's only fitting that the two would do this together.
Yeah.
It's just so great.
Yeah. Yes, I'm very grateful.
Yes. Me too. I've told you both that whenever I see you together, you just look like you belong together. You look like a match set. So.
Yeah.
It's so great.
Uh-huh. You want to hear another poem?
Yes, please. We can do that throughout the show. So whenever you feel called, Winnie, you just break in and share a poem with me.
I will. Okay, this one just to me. It's called O Mother God. Clothe me in your love suit of radiance. Sew for me the finest threads of grace. Move me lightly through the day. Plant a lingering scent of sweetness in the air. Remind me again that love is mine because of you, as I learn to walk graciously along a path with you.
Mm. I just love those. And those are throughout the book for our listeners.
Yeah.
So the book, The Local Universe Mother Spirit, you have this beautiful combination of masculine and feminine in the two writers, both David and Winnie. Mm-hmm. Winnie punctuates the book with these incredible poems. So wonderful. So David,
there's also a quote that I'd like to share briefly, just in for those listeners who aren't familiar with your Urantia book, and that when we're talking about the mother spirit, we're talking about the sort of the family of or the descendants of the infinite spirit or the Holy Spirit, the way Christians would think of the Trinity as the third person of Trinity. And it says that the functional family of the third source and center is divided into three great groups: the supreme spirits, the power directors, and the personalities of the infinite spirit. And that the third source and center is represented in the grand universe by a vast array of ministering spirits, messengers, teachers, adjudicators, helpers, advisors, and together with the supervisors of certain circuits of physical, moral, and spiritual nature. So the universe mother spirit is really an important partner with a creator son or a master son, as our local universe, or as our planet knows of as Jesus of Nazareth, the Son of Man.
So here's a question for both of you guys, since you undertook to write this important book and this all-important aspect of our mother, our creative mother. Why do you suppose, and one of the complaints that I hear about the Urantia book often at expos and doing outreach, and is that it has a paternal language to it. And this feminine aspect is almost, it's very overt if you read the book, but it's also kind of hidden. And so how would you address that if I was coming up to you at a booth saying, well, why is the Urantia book so written in such paternal language?
Well, this is David speaking. I had discussed that in the introduction book that I wrote, the introduction to the Urantia Revelation. It simply is because I think it came from the cultural usage at the time, maybe the Urantia papers came through in the early part of the 20th century, and I find it somewhat frustrating because everything is male, pretty much, except there are compensating factors. For instance, Jesus set up a women's corps when he was here, and then the Urantia book goes on to say, for example, that it's a male-dominated planet, and that they don't consider a planet to be evolved out of barbarism as long as one sex tends to prevail over the other.
Mm-hmm.
So there are compensating statements in the Urantia book that totally acknowledge the validity of females, to say the least. And, but it is written often in male terms, so...
But don't you think there's more in the Urantia book about the equality of male and female than most scriptures that we'll find in the world by a long shot?
I would say so, yes. The Jesus papers make a point of talking about the value of women.
Well, in your introduction to this book on the Universe Mother Spirit, the very first paragraph, do you mind if I read that?
No, go. Please do.
It says, our planet was chosen by our creator son, Michael, over 2,000 years ago as a backdrop to reveal the matchless love, mercy, and patience of the Paradise Father. Michael is more commonly known as Jesus Christ. Our local universe mother spirit, the subject of this book, is co-sovereign deity, co-creator, and consort with our creator son. And together they can be considered to be our godparents. She is historically little known, and the revelation of her presence in the Urantia book is thrilling. She is also known as the Divine Minister, or as our local universe creative spirit. And I just want to interrupt here and just say, what I'm impressed with is how many places she is referred to with the word creative. I mean, it's several dozen.
That's
but anyway,
true.
Among other attributes, she provides the spark or the breath of life without which we would not exist.
Yeah, actually, Winnie wrote most of that part of the introduction. So thank you, Winnie. That was just fabulous.
Yes, well, I think the Urantia book is really the first major revelation that we have on this planet of God the Mother, and that she is, as I said, scattered throughout. And Paula, I agree that we have to go looking for her. It's not, it doesn't happen just suddenly that we discover her in the book. She's everywhere, and just as her presence is more subtle, it's more encompassing. She's the other hand of God, and that there's such a balance that I think we have to be seekers in order to find her.
Yeah, you know, readers that have studied for many years have told me that, you know, absolutely the supreme being, which is a huge concept in the Urantia book and a very deep concept, we could do a whole show just on the supreme and more, and many people believe that the supreme is feminine deity, and there again you have this concept of omnipresence. And I think it's difficult for humans, you know, the Urantia book starts early on in the very first section of the foreword, talking about conceptual poverty and talking about the difficulty it is to present concepts such as they were presenting in a circumscribed language of a given realm. And they're talking about just English on this one planet. And the conceptual poverty of English. And we know English is probably conceptually better than a lot of languages, but their task was to try to present enlarged concepts of truth given the conceptual poverty of language. And when they're talking about the omnipresence of God and trying to tell these concepts to creatures that are on a sex planet with you know, dual origin universe with male and female, and that looms so large, and to try to present these concepts in a way that would be understandable, that would still make the deities personal, reachable. And mm-hmm. And I think that's why I love your poetry so much, Winnie, because it personalizes the Cosmic Mother for us. She becomes very personal, and you know, to try to have a relationship with her is almost like being a drop in the ocean and saying to the ocean, "Get me wet."
Yes, because that's right.
And
it speaking to the ocean. I think that's true, that there is this attempt to speak to the ocean, you know, and really reach out. I'll read you this Love Across Borders, this poem that I wrote called Love Across Borders. Lines drawn across our lands, dotted through oceans and lakes. We fly in starry eyes beyond this planet home, in her radiant mindscape. She who holds flight plans in her heart, road trips in her veins, windswept joy her wings.
Yeah.
It's kind of an attempt to get out of our conceptual poverty, I think you called it, Paula.
Mm-hmm. And I think it helps to think of her, to know her as the mother of our guardian angels. The mother
Definitely.
Of those spirit beings that are so close to us and so lovingly watch over us and guide us towards our universe destiny. And that they love us so much, I mean, even more than our earthly parents ever could. And that this love really does permeate the universe, our local universe. We are really personally known and personally loved in this way.
Yeah,
reparenting almost.
Yeah, we probably all could use a bit of that.
Yeah, going back one step to the mother the deity mother concept, I agree with Crystal in that some places the Ranch Book refers to the Eternal Son as the Eternal Mother Son, and sometimes refers to the Great Spirit as the Infinite Paradise Infinite Spirit as He, and sometimes refers to the Paradise Infinite Spirit as our Infinite Mother Spirit or something of that nature. And so, and also refers to the God the Supreme as a universe mother. And I think they're working with the mother-father concept simply because we're sex creatures and they're trying to make connotations or give you a feeling for attributes of God that are loving like a mother. So.
Right.
What are some of the other attributes that you discuss in your book?
All right, let's look at some of them. We talked that she is deity. She's feminine deity. And her space presence defines our local universe. She's co-creator and co-sovereign of our local universe. And creative and administrative associate of our local universe, Creator Son. And the Creator Son has acknowledged her as co-sovereign and equal to him in status. And again, we should mention that this Creator Son in the Rancher Book is known as Jesus here on our planet. And our local universe Creator Son did an incarnation here as a human, and that's the Jesus story there. She's the mother of the host of angels, including guardian angels, and all these points I've read here we've already touched on, but I'll keep going. She's co-creator of archangels and of Gabriel, our local universe bright morning star, and co-creator of brilliant evening stars and other Melchizedek, Verondadek, and Melondadek. She's co-parent with the Creator Son of a number of different orders of beings and creatures. But one important point we haven't touched on here is that she provides the basis for animal and human mind. In other words, mind is something we use and we're provided with. It comes from her, basically. It comes from the Mother Spirit.
Now, that's a real unique concept in the Arantia book for a lot of people, isn't it? Because for so many eons, we just have sort of thought of the function of mind as being a male-dominated circuitry. And
yeah.
Go ahead.
Would you repeat that again? Because I didn't quite hear it. And so it was the last attribute of mind that you just mentioned and Crystal and expounded on.
Okay, the Mother Spirit provides the basis for animal and human mind. In the Rancher book, the life plasma is created by the life order of beings called the life carriers way in the early days of the planet. But there's two things the Mother Spirit provides to that life plasma to make it come alive, and one of them is the breath or spark of life, which, so you wouldn't have life without the Mother Spirit, and the other is the basis for mind. In other words, there's seven adjutant mind spirits that she provides, and we share five of those adjutant mind spirits with the animals of the planet. And then humans have two additional mind channels, the worship and wisdom mind channels. But all those seven adjutant mind spirits are actually circuits of the Mother Spirit, or levels of consciousness of the Mother Spirit. She provides those. And it's a pretty remarkable concept.
And what are those two attributes of mind that we as humans possess that animals don't have?
Yeah, the worship.
Yeah.
Did you? I didn't hear it, so go ahead and say it again so that our listeners can hear it too. The two that possess as will creatures, as creatures of will dignity, that the... that animals don't.
What differentiates the animals from the humans, or the humans from the animals, is that humans have two mind channels, worship and wisdom, that animals don't have. And so I like to say, from that point of view, that humans are about 5/7 animal.
Very good point. You know, the Urantia book says many, many times that one of the things that we need to overcome is our animal nature. And I think that you point out that, you know, we have a lot to overcome because we are material creatures on a material world. And just one step above even the lowest creatures in the universe, which is the animals of any given realm. So, you know, worship and wisdom set us apart. And I'd love, if you want to, you guys, if you could expound on those seven adjutant mind spirits, the gift of the mother, that we're plugged into. I think that... that the chakra system, and there's a lot, that it's not like this information is new, but it's never been presented in this way as a gift from the Divine Mother, those that the gift of mind and the seven adjutant mind spirits. Do you feel like expounding on those a little bit?
Sure. They, let's see here.
I can share a quote you have under, it says, mind such as man comprehends it is an endowment of the seven adjutant mind spirit superimposed on the non-teachable or mechanical levels of mind. And I think that's an interesting thing. It's kind of, for me, it's sort of like the software on top of the hardware.
I agree.
And the fact that we have those two, the last two, I appreciated that you called them channels, David, because we can tune into them, and some other creatures can't, but it doesn't mean we automatically tune into them. So you know, going back to Winnie's attempt to tune into the mother, it really looms large then, because those are her gifts, and every attempt to tune into those is a good thing.
Let me read descriptions of the spirit of worship and the spirit of wisdom. These are Urantia book quotes. The spirit of worship, the religious impulse, the first differential urge separating mind creatures into two basic classes of mortal existence. The spirit of worship forever distinguishes the animal of its association from the soulless creature of mind endowment. Worship is the badge of spiritual ascension candidacy. And then the spirit of wisdom is the inherent tendency for all moral creatures towards orderly and progressive evolutionary advancement. This is the highest of the adjutants, the spirit coordinator and articulator of the work of all others. And it goes on. I might as well keep going. This spirit is the secret of that inborn urge of mind creatures which initiates and maintains the practical and effective program of the ascending scale of existence. The gift of living things which accounts for their inexplicable ability to survive and in survival to utilize the coordination of all their past experience and present opportunities for the acquisition of all and everything that all of the other six mental ministers can mobilize in the mind of the organism concerned. Wisdom is the acme of intellectual performance. Wisdom is the goal of purely mental and moral existence. I think the wisdom is like a integrating software where you take all the factors of the other six mind channels and put them together into a direction. Wisdom has a lot to do with God, for example, and how to live your life. They say if you're if you're wise, you never make mistakes. But how do you get wise? If you get there by making mistakes, right?
And that's really a concept in the Arantia book that moves me quite a bit, is the idea that it's perfectly okay for us to make mistakes, that doing our best to grow, to reach out, to try new things, is really the freedom that God gives us, the free will that God gives us to make mistakes and to gain experience and to gain wisdom from that, and that that's a good thing, and that loving parents allow their kids to make mistakes, and a loving universe, not only allows us to make mistakes, but sort of welcomes us in making mistakes. And
yes,
that's pretty new concept religiously, when so much of our history has really been dominated by the idea of doing everything possible to avoid making mistakes or to avoid being wrong.
And that our mother is also a mercy ministry, and so that we have her as our backup support in times of making old mistakes, too. The quote that I love in this book is, the Mother Spirit is our representative of the tremendous and universal enterprise of mercy ministry of the third person of deity. So that's her role as well.
And that mercy really is another word for forgiveness or acceptance or tolerance.
And what could be more at the heart of a parental love than that? I mean, anybody who's been a parent completely understands that. And, there's so little that you would hold against your child. I can't even imagine anything. Really. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine anything that, that would make me give up on my child.
Right.
And I think that is just the heart of a parental attitude. And so if we humans, as imperfect as we are, can possess such a divine aspect of love, how much more beautiful and complete and replete and merciful is divine love, the love of our cosmic mother, the love of our universe father. This concept that we're in the omnipresent spirit of our mother, and we have her gifts of the seven adjutant mind spirits working with us. We have the gift from our universal father at the first source and center of all things. He gives the gift of his divine indwelling. The Arantia book calls it the thought adjuster. It's not a new concept. The Hebrews called it the still small voice. The Egyptians called it the Khan, the Ba. So it's the voice within us. It's at the core of our being. it's our beacon home to paradise. So he gives us that ministry. The father of the local universe, our own Jesus, our own master, Michael's son, gives us his spirit of truth. We have these ministries that are just all around us. The only way that we can be separate from the love of God is if we choose to be, because they all honor our will above everything else. And
yeah, that's one of the natures of God, is honoring, respecting human will. And then he goes on to say that that thought adjuster you were talking about is actually subservient to human will. And it's up to the human to recognize and appreciate love and God and the good things of life, truth, beauty, and goodness, and so forth.
Mm-hmm. I wrote a poem where I was trying to imagine her presence speaking to us, because often, you know, we are petitioning her or asking for her help. But this one is called Family Reunion. Divine Mother Dearest, we curl up in your arms, snuggling in your comforter, wrapped in warmth and love, safe in the midst of this wild ride that haunts our days. You sing to us and touch our hearts. Lay down, sweet ones. Restore your souls with streams of healing light. Come together in my home, my family, where you belong. And I like say, I like to imagine what she might be saying to us.
I love that. You have a great imagination.
And I, and it's you know, of course it's her mind that is inspiring the possibility that we could be even imagining what she might be saying to us.
You know, I have to harken back what Jesus said to John Mark. Most Urantia Book readers cherish this section so much. It's known on high as the day that a boy spent alone in the hills with God, and John Mark insisted on going with Jesus when the other apostles would have loved to do it, but they didn't have the persistence that John Mark did, and because he wouldn't be denied, Jesus allowed him to come along. The master had wanted to spend a day by himself in the hills, but John insisted, and so Jesus let him come. And I love that, right? It's all about persistence. But while they were there, you know, knowing our master and how much, how wise, talk about wise, the wisdom that he had, he knew that this young man was going to be getting married soon and having a family. So what did he talk about to John Mark? He talked about early home life. And he told them, you know, John, the reason that you're with us is because your parents were wise. You grew up in a home where love reigns and wisdom rules, and they trusted you enough to allow you to go and have an experience, which is touching on something that we said earlier, too, about, you know, being free to learn our lessons, make our mistakes in the loving universe that we live in. And but at one point he tells, you know, and he talks at length about early home life to John Mark, and he says the child's, the child must derive his first impression of the universe from the mother's care. He is wholly dependent earthly father for his first ideas of the heavenly father. So imagine the responsibility that falls on us as earthly parents, that and then he goes on to say that child's subsequent life is made happy or unhappy, easy or difficult, in accordance with his early mental and emotional life, conditioned by these social and spiritual relationships of the home. A human being's entire afterlife is enormously influenced by what happens during the first few years of life. And, you know, I just think what you just read, Winnie, is she's our home. Our mother's spirit is our universe home. And she permeates our home, and we live in this dual origin universe where we have our mother and our father, And so our world obviously is patterned after that, even if we don't know it. And women hold the space of their home, and they create a place of warmth, a place where people feel safe, where they are happy to be, content, at peace, comforted.
And that feeling, I think that feeling that we have as children can nourish us all through our lives. There is that feeling of coming home to our mother's home-cooked meals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the security that our father provides. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've liked to run with that pattern a little bit for myself and realize that it's, as a child growing up, if I was scared, I'd run to my father. I'd very by my father if I was scared. If I was hurt, I'd run to my mother.
Yeah, you go to dad for protection and mom for comfort.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's just that simple. You know, so there's another place in the book that says, so long as we teach our children to pray, our Father who is in heaven, a great responsibility rests on all fathers to order their homes so that that concept of Heavenly Father becomes worthily enshrined in their children's hearts. And it's, I think it's the same with the mother, you know. We want that concept of home to be worthily enshrined, and that concept of comfort and security and being nurtured and being loved by a divine presence, a feminine presence.
Well, and I think it's so clarifying to me anyways that even though the eternal sun is the pattern of mortal personality attainment, you will find it easier to grasp the reality of both the Father and the Spirit because the Father is the actual bestower of your human personality. And the infinite spirit is the absolute source of your mortal mind.
Mm. Beautiful.
Yeah.
That's helped clarify it for me.
Mm-hmm.
We could go back.
Go ahead, David.
We could go back to the other adjutant mind spirits, if I'm not interrupting you.
No.
Some thoughts here. We started off talking about the spirits of worship and wisdom that humans have that animals don't have. But it's interesting to look at the other ones that we share with animals. So one of them is the spirit of intuition, the quick perception, the primitive physical inherent reflex instinct, etc. The spirit of understanding, the impulse of coordination, the spontaneous and approximately automatic association of ideas, and then the spirit of courage, the fidelity endowment in personal beings, the basis of character acquirement, and the intellectual root of moral stamina and spiritual bravery, the spirit of knowledge, the curiosity mother of adventure and discovery, the scientific spirit, the guide and faithful associate of the spirits of courage and counsel, the urge to direct the endowments of courage into useful and progressive paths of growth, and then the spirit of counsel, the social urge, the endowment of species cooperation, the ability of will creatures to harmonize with their fellows, the origin of the gregarious instinct among the more lowly creatures. So those five we share with animals, and then the last two, the spirit of worship and the spirit of wisdom, humans have. Spirit of worship creates spontaneous religion. You know, way back in the early days of savage mankind and savage womankind, I should add, to balance it out.
Yes.
The savage
we have
human
our moment.
Yeah.
That, you know, they just have an urge to worship because of that mind channel. So they tend to start off doing fear-based religions and worshiping things of nature, but nonetheless it is a form of worship, and it comes from the fact that they have a mind channel, a spirit of worship within them. So,
and we just reiterate again, just quickly, the seven adjutants are, let's see, the spirit of worship, the spirit of wisdom, the spirit of counsel, the spirit of knowledge, the spirit of courage, the spirit of understanding, and the spirit of intuition. So going from the bottom to the top, it's intuition, and I like to compare them to the chakra system. So that's the first chakra. Understanding is the second. Courage is the third. It's interesting, too, solar plexus. You know, people say, well, he doesn't have the guts, you know. That's courage. Knowledge is the heart, right? And that's the fourth one. And Jesus once said to one of his apostles, what manner of thinking is going on in your heart? So knowledge, knowing, counsel is the throat chakra. Isn't that interesting? We counsel each other with our voice. Then, of course,
our
we
communication
have,
skills.
Yeah. And then the sixth is worship, which is the third eye. And then wisdom. Actually, the wisdom is, no, wait, the worship is the sixth. That's the third eye, and wisdom is the top. So I love your, and that's the crown, and I love your analogy, David, that's the application that integrates all of the rest.
Yeah, it provides the direction. We are co-creators with God of ourselves, I believe. And wisdom is like, oh, I'm not going to do that again. That didn't feel good.
didn't like the outcome of that.
Yeah, you know, it is a challenge to integrate our whole being. And the Urantia book reiterates that concept so many times. It talks about personality integration and a well-balanced personality. And, you know, so when you've tapped into that spirit of wisdom, you're really trying to operate from there. It's the same gauntlet that Jesus threw down when he said, you know, self-control is what you're striving for. You know, it'd be better if you could control yourself than a whole city. And I think that's our task as humans on a world like this, which certainly no easy thing. but the gifts of the mother are those mind adjutants are all important.
That we're given a gift of her mercy and her grace, and this poem kind of speaks to that. And it was written after I'd made yet another blunder, and of course I make lots of those. This planet is full of
full of opportunities to blunder.
Yes, opportunities. This one's called Joker's Wild, and I wanted it to have more of a rap quality to it. I've beat the odds at least so far, well, maybe here and there, a flaw, a pause, a note to self of some old loss that spoiled my day, and then a price to pay. Didn't seem to stop me, though. I made a comeback strong, found my way back to God, get away with one more wrongdoing that pleased me, just like wooing, crooning, the fandango tango, bingo bango. We gamble every day in such a way, jokers wild and hell to pay. Live with crazies, knock on wood, carry on as if we stood in favor and savor God's loving grace.
Mm.
So we do.
I love your
question. Oh, thank you.
I do, and I'm a poet, and I've been loving poetry all of my life. And it is just really sublime, and I thank you so much for taking on the Mother Spirit as a subject matter.
Yes, and I just wanted to mention another poet who is Buffy St. Marie, and I wrote to her because we were looking for cover art for our book, and I wrote and asked her if she had any ideas for a cover art, and she said that she gives thanks to our mother every day, and that she is the inspiration of her music, and she said, I don't have an idea right now, but if I do, I will get in touch. And the very next day she wrote back, and she said she stayed up really late, and she visioned our mother spirit coming up through the watery depths and just, you know, cradling us in this wonderful water womb. And then she said she started to vision her in the starry night sky. And this, and she sent this beautiful cover art piece that she created, and that's the one we have. I don't know if you've seen it on the cover of the book.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had a friend one time endeavor to tell me a vision he had of the Infinite Mother Spirit, uh-huh. and how she was. How the universes were like jewels. And he used the word encrusted. She was encrusted with these beautiful jewels, these diadems of stars and suns, and planets were like, you know, the beads around her neck. It was just such a beautiful vision he, you know, gave me of her, you know, the universe being her.
Oh, yeah.
I always cherish that because it helps me. I'm a visual person, and oftentimes I'll get picturizations too. And that one of the that Chick Montgomery took one of the visions I had of the mother and created the image that was used for ICO-8 with her sprinkling angels down on the earth.
And I've seen that at that. Yeah.
Yeah. She was holding the earth in the crook of her arm like a little baby. And
okay.
she was rubbing her fingers together like your mother did when she was trying to put salt into a recipe, you know. And I asked her, show me what is falling upon the earth. What is that you're sprinkling on the earth? And she brought me in closer, and I saw angels were coming down. She was sprinkling. It was just. It was really awesome. And I think, I'm not an artist. I mean, I might have been if I'd have given the time requisite, but I got married way too early and I had to take care of my children and work and whatnot. But I loved art. But if I could have created it, you know, Chick did a beautiful job. And I love the way that he put, like, the universe, the central universe as her crown. And I just thought that was so neat. He did a good job.
Yes, it's a beautiful painting. I've seen it.
Yeah, I love it. I thought he did a wonderful job with it.
That is beautiful.
And I'll share another one with you guys since, you know, you know, sometimes these come to me while I'm listening to beautiful music, interestingly enough. And the other one, that really clear vision of the Mother Spirit I had, I was listening to a piece of music called Novus Magnificat, and I was contemplating the Mother, and I was contemplating the threefold mansion of light, which the Urantia book mentions at the center of our universe where Michael lives, where he dwells. And the insight that came to me, and I was contemplating his life on this planet, kind of like a hard day at the office, a really hard day, and how when you put in a really hard day or a hard week or sometimes a hard year or whatever period of time it is, and you just spend yourself, you just come home bone tired, just completely wiped out. And going back to this space that the Mother creates where you can come in and feel revivified and rejuvenated and comforted and refreshed in the Mother's comfort and the Mother's ministry, which she is the heart of ministry, really. And so these things were going through my mind, and I at once had a vision of the threefold mansion of light. So I was contemplating what that might look like, and I saw a beautiful swirling lotus-like flower. And the master was, I could see him from behind. He was walking towards it. And it was kind of a slow, deliberate walk of someone very weary, needing rest. And as he got closer to this beautiful, pearlescent, lotus-like structure, and it was swirling and shimmering and radiating light, the petals opened up, and at the very core was the mother. And he held her arms out to him, and he walked into her arms, and then the petals closed around him. And I got this beautiful image of her, just the umbilical of the universe, this umbilical life cord, you know, this center of beingness, and the core, the very core, and everything radiating out from around her, and that is the mansion they dwell in, threefold mansion of life that the Urantia book mentions, at the center of this universe, and she is at that core. It was just such a beautiful image to watch him walk in, and she enfolded him, and then I could see him more after that. Brilliant.
And it has so much movement.
Oh, I know.
Yes, because she's movement as well.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me here of some sayings or quotes about the renewal of the spirit. I'll read a couple of quotes. Your power and achievement is according to God's mercy through the renewing of the spirit. The spirit quickens, gives life. It's not in word only, but also in power in the Holy Spirit. The divine spirit is the water of life. And so that relates to that vision where he gets refreshed by the spirit. Renewed.
Yeah. He loved using that metaphor too for spirit, the water of life. And again, the ocean comes to play. You know, there it is. It's the, I love to contemplate mother and father and the difference just on earth. When you see that the earth is like father, it's upholding, it's strong, it's sturdy. It's, you know, we build on it. But the ocean is like mother. It's malleable. It's all-encompassing. It envelops you. And, of course, you know, you need both the ocean and the land and then to create the atmosphere, which is the three essential ingredients of life on any world.
I have a beautiful poem about that called Your Heartbeat.
Yay.
It was just sitting right here. I'm so glad you mentioned that about her water imagery. Dear Mother God, you hold our hearts in tenderness. We float in your creative womb, splashing like dolphins at play, leaping in sunbeams or diving to depths. We are in your watch care. You are the very music we sing, the harmony from within. We are blessed in your radiance. Even when stars are blocked in darkest clouds, you are the heartbeat that comforts us. Your waves bring us into shore on our journey home.
Beautiful.
Yeah, great.
I love that water image. Mm-hmm.
Me too. It's so soft, you know. It's so,
yes.
I don't know, enveloping. And there's nothing like,
yes.
There's nothing as healing as, for me anyway, to be in water. The first thing I want to do when I don't feel well is take a hot bath.
Yes.
Yeah. And it works so well for me. I mean, it will almost invariably make me feel better.
Yes, me too.
There's a few more attributes we could go over, and then maybe we have time to talk about her ministries to humans. Of course, we have been talking about these things as we've gone along here. But there are a couple of attributes I'd like to mention. One of them is that humans and other sex creatures couldn't reproduce without her. She's in charge of, and I'm going to quote the Urantia book here, the impartation of prerogatives of reproductive means.
Wow.
But that's... And so the life carriers can create plasm, but she provides a spark of life, and she provides the mind, and if they're going to reproduce, she has to buy into that. So.
Well, and I think, too, that this idea that the Urantia book tells us about, you know, really what happens during the process of death, for example, you know, that once the capacity of mind decision-making, moral decision-making, and that function of mind stops and it's irreparable, that a person is considered spiritually dead.
That's true.
And so that, you know, we don't, when we're resurrected, it's that mind light that gets turned back on, you know, that reactivates our personality. And that our body might be lying there, or even walking around, I suppose, but lying there still breathing, you know, blood still pumping through our veins. And we might be legally considered still alive on this world. But they don't consider us alive anymore once our mind is dead, once our brain stops functioning. And I really appreciate that the fact that it says when those mind circuits are irreparably damaged.
That's
or
true.
Injured.
The thought adjuster leaves at that point.
Right.
The fragment, the indwelling fragment of God says, so things are broken here. I'm relieved of duty.
Right. And we don't necessarily know when that is, because sometimes people are in a coma, or, you know, they have capacity for all kinds of mind activity that we don't know about, that we're starting to learn. You know, we had a wonderful guest speaker on last year, Allison Zopel, who shared her experience of being in different levels of coma and the amazing connection she had with God and with her angels during that period of time, where she couldn't really communicate with the human beings around her.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I just think that that's very interesting information to have.
Yes, she's one thing about when the mind becomes irreparably damaged is that that person still might survive and be resurrected depending on their previous choosing in their life. You know, you aren't.
Oh, yeah. I was just talking about earthly death, an earthly death.
Yeah. For sure.
I think it's important to key in on the fact that here we are again. It's her gift, and it's the attribute that you just mentioned, David, that life, you know, there is no life without mind. Mind is consciousness, and it is her gift. I just went and looked up the quote from the book. I posted it on the board. Animal mind and human mind are the gifts of the local universe mother spirit, functioning through the seven adjutant mind spirits. While creature ability to reproduce is a specific and personal impartation of the universe spirit of the ancestral life plasm. It goes on to say a gift of the life carriers, but it's still coming from mother, that life.
That's correct, yeah.
Well, not to to too quickly move us off of this concept of the ministry of mind, but let's talk about some of the other ministry resources of our local universe mother. And, you know, some of the angelic, you know, the seraphim, cherubim, sanabim, the guardian angels, the archangels. What are some of the other ways that our mother ministers to us? Yeah.
Yeah. Probably, like you mentioned, there's a number of ways. There's the Holy Spirit, her spiritual circuit, her ministry spirit, the spirit of the spirit. And there's the adjutant mind spirit. And again, she's a mercy minister. The third person of deity is a mercy minister. And it's important to note that she never drives. She only leads. And
And I think just to draw back to that male and female concept, I find that that is one of the ways in which one might differentiate a female drive versus a male drive, or a female attribute versus a male attribute.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good point, because it says that she gently and lovingly leads you along the pathway of sonship and spiritual progress. Every step you take must be one of willingness, intelligent, and cheerful cooperation.
Yes, that's a great quote.
Well, and we should point out that the quote that you just quoted is from a paper, a whole paper in the Urantia book, totally devoted to the local universe mother spirit, and that's paper 34. And, oh, my, it is such a beautiful paper. And so full of insight about the mother. And I love that quote that you just quoted, David. The spirit never drives. Well, you both did, actually. David started it, and Winnie finished it. It never drives, only leads. If you are a willing learner, if you want to attain spirit levels and reach divine heights, if you sincerely desire to reach the eternal goal, then the Spirit will gently and lovingly lead you along. You know, so often we, and here again, we're trying to become more like our universe parents, more like our infinite and perfect deity, God, the first great source and center. And the book tells us, the Urantia book tells us, that God stands back in merciful respect, and the Most Highs of the universe, of the universes, stand back in merciful respect of the prerogatives of will. And yet we try to force each other and coerce each other all the time. It's interesting, isn't it? We just
We're quite
do
bossy.
It. Yeah.
Well, there is that.
And, you know, the angels, again, the angels are the gift of the mother, and the book, again, says about angels, they won't try to coerce you or force a decision, but once you make a decision, they'll do their utmost to help you make the most of that decision.
They respect your dignity of your personality. They won't coerce you or force you, yeah.
Right.
I'm sorry.
No, this is a totally off the subject, but just felt like sharing it. We were watching this program on nature a couple nights ago about these huge eagles in the tropical rainforest in Venezuela. They're called the harpy eagles, and they're really large, you know, like over 3 feet tall, and with a wingspan over 6 feet, and they're just these amazing, beautiful, majestic animals. And they were filming this nest with a baby eaglet, And the mother, you know, was just being so gentle and so nurturing to this little baby hatchling. And they, you know, in the tropical rainstorms hit, and they just last for days, and they can't really hunt, and they can't really fly around in that torrential rain downpour. And so she just sits there, you know, with her wings covering this chick for 3 days without food, without, you know, any other sustenance. And when the sun finally comes out and she sits on the side of her nest and she just starts calling to the male, you know, to bring food, and he finally shows up with a kill, and you know, he sets it down and he starts to pull it apart, and she just shoves him out of the nest to go back and get something, you know, get something else. And my husband turned to me, looks to me, and he says, hence the name Harpy.
Go get food.
Go get more food. You've been gone for 3 days. We need more food. That was just so cool.
I'm going to go back to the ministries of the Mother Spirit. In our lives, she works primarily through the adjuvant mind spirits, her Holy Spirit, and through her children, the guardian angels, who directly minister to us. I just want to throw that out because it'll probably lead us to talking about the guardian angels, and who are agents of the infinite spirit on high. Angels are actually God's agents, and so they're part of the mercy ministry that extends from paradise all the way down here to our planet.
Well, the minute you said that, right before you said that, David, I posted a quote from the Urantia book on the board from paper 113, section 5, Seraphic Ministry to Mortals. And it simply says, in the life of the flesh, the intelligence of angels is not directly available to mortal men. They are not overlords or directors. They are simply guardians. The seraphim guard you. They do not seek directly to influence you. You must chart your own course, but these angels then act to make the best possible use of the course you have chosen. They do not ordinarily, arbitrarily interfere in life. But when they receive instructions from their superiors to perform some unusual exploit, you may rest assured that these guardians will find some means of carrying out these mandates. They do not, therefore, intrude into the picture of human drama, except in emergencies, and then usually on the direct orders of their superiors. They are the beings who are going to follow you for many an age, and they are thus receiving an introduction to their future work and personality association. Imagine how hard it would be to be in charge of, like a child, and have to restrain yourself from being an overlord of that child. You know? I mean, that's kind of...
They don't intrude. That's the important thing there. They do, quote, function as teachers of men by guiding the footsteps of human personality into paths of new and progressive experiences. To accept the guidance of a seraphim rarely means attaining a life of ease. In following this leading, you are sure to encounter, and if you have the courage, to traverse the rugged hills of moral choosing and spiritual progress. So they don't intrude and lay a trip on you, but they will lead you to have experiences that cause you to learn and grow and make moral choices.
Wow, I love that's one of my favorite quotes about them.
Yeah, it's beautiful. So yeah. Again, we are this very personal ministry of them that touches us in such a real way. With the seraphim, which are her gift, her daughters, and her personal ministers to us.
I also love the concept the Urantia book shares about the seraphim and that our angels are the ideational clearinghouses. You know, that they're like the repository of ideas and creativity. And, you know, I remember thinking about that as a very young child, wondering where ideas came from. But when you're doing a painting or drawing a picture or writing a song or creating a poem, I've never really felt responsible for that coming through me. You know, sometimes you start out, you don't know where it's going to go, especially musically. I mean, that's particularly meaningful for me with music. It's like you're just writing a song and these melodies just come to you, or the poetry just comes to you. And that seems to me to be a function of Mother Spirit through our angels, don't you think?
I think so, and that you have to kind of open your end of the channel to accept those messages. Otherwise, they would just be lost, I guess.
Yeah. The angels help us with our music or appreciate our music. And then here's another quote about guardian seraphim. Obviously, I'm a linear thinker. I have to do one thing at a time here. The guardian seraphim are not mind, although they do spring from the same source that gives origin to mortal mind, the creative spirit. Seraphim are mind stimulators that continually seek to promote circle-making decisions in the human mind. They do this not as does the adjuster operating from within and through the soul, but rather from the outside inward, working through the social, ethical, and moral environment of human beings. Seraphim are not the divine adjuster lure of the universal Father, but they do function as the personal agency of the ministry of the infinite spirit. They, in cooperation with the secondary midwayers and I think some cherubims, which are pretty nearly close to being morontial or physical, I believe they all, when they work through the social, ethical, and moral environment of humans, I suspect that somehow they manage to get people to meet each other at particular points in time, or keep people away from each other, or cause you to have make moral decisions and set up situations. They do it through magic, I'm sure.
Well, you know, and when you think about it, the Urantia book gives you such depth of meaning and purpose of these gifts of our mother, these angels, that loom so large in our own universe journey, and they do so much. They guard us. Yes, we knew that, but they are the record keepers, the accountants, the they do reflectivity. They are just these amazing, diverse beings. And they're like the glue that holds the universe of universes together. It makes it function well and properly. And so it's really interesting that, Crystalyn, your idea about them holding thoughts, being the repository of thoughts. Well, we know that they are the master record keepers, and that history is never lost. History is, you know, just because on this planet, because libraries have been burned, we think, well, that history's lost. We'll never know that. But the Urantia book says, no, of course not. History, you know, the history of a planet, the evolution of a people from barbarism to utopia, I guess you could say, is recorded meticulously. and could be given back to us at any time. I think some people, in the New Age call it the Akashic Records. I think that's what they're describing. And that mind is so real. Her mind, her gift of mind is so real.
Her children, the archangels, there's about 800,000 of them in our local universe. One of their features, one of the things they do, is they're personality record keepers. So that's one of their tasks. They do a number of other things as well. But then again, that ties back to the Akashic Records, personality record keepers.
Well, Winnie, I think this calls for a poem.
I was going to say, I'm just looking at this wonderful one called Angel Muse. Sweet angel muse, messenger of hope, you cast a sparkle, hum a tune, angels we have heard on high. My sister's glorias sing through snapshot memories of school concerts, dressing up with tinsel halos, cheesecloth gowns and gauzy wings. First hint of spirit springtime, wondrous ones who roll away the stone, you call for resurrection time. And I think it says somewhere that there are angels of resurrection as well.
There are angels of resurrection, and there's also archangels who play a role in resurrection as well.
Isn't it interesting that as children, we have such a sense of angels as children that we dress up as angels and, parade around.
Well, they're loving. They're non-threatening.
They're good friends.
Someone said on the board earlier, I think it was Dr. Dave, he was with us with his little daughter, Olivia. They tune in on a regular basis, and he's expecting another baby girl very soon. And he and Crystalyn were talking on the board about a father's volitional love, and that the first thing a baby often sees in the world is the face of her father and her mother, the father and mother. But I mused, what face do you think is the first face you see on the mansion worlds when you open your eyes on resurrection morning? And for me, in my mind's eye, I always see the face of my guardian. But I just see them waiting, waiting for consciousness to happen, and you open your eyes, and there they are. And I just have this clear mental image of it, that, the first thing you see, and of course your eyes by then are anointed to see them, and what a glorious thing that will be.
That is fabulous.
And to see them smiling at you as you open your eyes and are reconstituted, your consciousness, your unique being is present, and they're witnessing it, and welcome to this new world, little child of God.
Wow.
Oh, that is a fabulous image. Oh.
Oh, I hold that in my heart, Winnie.
Yes.
I love to think about what happens over there. We know it's kind of sad and lonely down here when we lose somebody we love. But what's going on over there, It's just like a birth. That's the way I look at it. It's as joyful and celebrated just as much. They may have a hard time seeing it the way we do. I think they understand that we get sad because we're going to miss the person that we love. But they understand also, because they have a long-distance view, that it's just the wink of an eye, and then we're all together again. And for them, it's such a joyous occasion. It's like a baby being born.
The Urantia book says that as planets get more advanced in light and life, that death isn't, ceremonies around death aren't quite so sad and tragic, because people have more knowledge about the fact that it's a graduation from the earth plane, you know, it's not the cessation of life necessarily, it's just a change in life form and location.
Right. It's the journey. It's the stuff. And they call it graduation.
They call it what?
Graduation, which we all do too, obviously. We love to hone in on.
And it does seem as if that concept of the fear of death, the dread of death, the grief of death, is so dramatically lessened, and we gain so much more comfort in the idea of our eternal destiny and what comes next as a result of the Urantia revelation. It's one of the real true gifts of this book.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I find great comfort in the information.
Yes. And I have a friend who works in hospice, and she said the difference between families who have a faith background and those who don't is quite dramatic in a hospice circumstance, because there's a comfort level that we can experience.
So there again is the mother helping us in our transition, and always with us, never leaving us. Never, we are never alone. And
never.
I don't know if you guys, you know, I have never seen an angel, and I know some people have seen them and have been given, you know, granted that ability to see on certain occasions. And we know that they said, that the lore of angels having wings comes from deathbed visions when people on their deathbed see the transport seraphim. And
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. They see the friction shields because they're going to take this soul now from here to deep into the universe, and they're going to transport them, and so they have these friction shields, and I imagine that when they fold back, they look like wings, and that's where our lore of wings comes from, this idea that angels have wings. And I just want to share that Steve Jobs, I don't know if you guys heard this, but they say that the last thing he said as he was dying, the last words he spoke, his wife and his sister and his two children were standing there at his bedside, and he looked just beyond them over their shoulder, and he said, "Oh, wow, oh, wow, oh, wow."
Oh.
He said it three times.
Wow.
Now, what do you suppose he was seeing? We can only imagine, but I bet he was seeing a transport seraphim.
I bet.
He was quite an amazing personality.
And being a linear thinker and a scientific thinker, he was not so sure about God, but I think the lesson is that our father and mother don't, you know, care if you're sure about them or not.
No.
As we live and move and have our being.
Yeah. Being sure about them is not a prerequisite, but having the spiritual fruits and. So we still have 25 minutes. I know we can touch on a lot more attributes of our precious and amazing Mother Spirit. And by the way, Winnie, John Krieger just chimed in and said, "Winnie, read your poems. I love your poems." So he just showed
up. Oh, that's lovely to hear from him. Yes, he's a good friend.
Yeah, he is. He's a sweetie.
Oh, this is for him then. It's called Mother Magic. I felt that twirl, sweet girl, secret spin of dance, the 361, straight through her universe, that quiver, that giggle of joy, twinkling her toes, catching her breath, spinning her creation?
Well, because this weekend or this week we've had 11-11-11.
Yeah.
yesterday. And for, you know, many hundreds of thousands of people around the world who are interested or have experienced the 11-11 phenomenon. We've done a couple shows on that, on what the Urantia book has to say about midwayers. And you mentioned that in your book about the ministering spirits of time. Maybe we can just touch on them really briefly. It says that although midwayers are not angels, they functionally are associated with them. Because of their intimate and effective association with angelic hosts in the work of serving mortal man on the individual worlds of space. And it says that primary midwayers resemble angels more than mortals, i.e. humans, and the secondary orders are much more like human beings. Each renders invaluable assistance to the other in the execution of their manifold planetary assignments. And we know from the Urantia book that there are 1,111 loyal secondary midwayers, that they're engaged in important missions on Earth. As compared with their primary associates, they are decidedly more material. And it says in the Urantia book that many times when people have thought they saw angels, they were actually seeing midwayers. Right?
Right.
That the secondary midwayers have been credited with much in our scripture, things that have been alluded to angels.
Yes. And I'm looking for a quote. I like this paragraph here out of the Urantia book. The 1,111 loyal secondary midwayers are engaged in important missions on Earth. As compared with their primary associates, they are decidedly material. They exist just outside the range of mortal vision and possess sufficient latitude of adaption to make, at will, physical contact with what humans call material things. These unique creatures have certain definite powers over things of time and space, not accepting the beasts of the realm. That's the quote out of the Urantia book. And then I go on to say, midwayers assist angels in their rare or unusual function as material ministers. So, although angels can be material ministers on rare occasion, oftentimes they work with midwayers, which are more typically associated with making contact with what we call material things.
You know, and people tell stories about falling off a cliff and feeling hands push them back up, or, you know, doors magically opening. I think the Urantia book gives the example of when Daniel was let out of the lion's den. It was actually the midwayers that did it, because they have the power for material things.
I think it's,
so they're all important to
I
the work. It says loyal, too, which we need to kind of touch on. There was a rebellion on this planet, and in fact, we're still in it, as far as any of us know. And only 1,111 of those midwayers, those secondary midwayers, remain loyal. So they have a lot of work, considering that we just reached 7 billion humans on this planet.
Yeah, I wanted to make that point. It's usually the things of God or the things associated with God are positive things, like when you mentioned someone falling off a cliff and feeling hands pushing them back up. It would be a life-saving issue, you know, something good going on.
Right. Something similar. It goes back to that quote I read earlier, too, about the guardian seraphim. If they're ordered by their supervisors to do something extraordinary, then they will intervene with the natural course of events. And the book is clear that that doesn't happen that often on a material world. But they will do it if they have to protect some destiny that's important to the evolution of the planet, some plan or some person of destiny that's important. And so I think that's interesting to note, because we often wonder why bad things happen to good people on a material world, but it's just the way, the nature of life on a material world.
And it also says that on the mansion worlds, you know, we'll be much more conscious and aware of our, you know, spiritual ministers, our seraphic instructors. But in the first life, men are usually unaware of them.
True.
Usually unaware. So some of us might be more aware of them than others.
Well, I've had experiences where I feel, you know, guided, or actually usually what happens is I don't notice anything except that I'll think, okay, it's time to go to a coffee shop, and then a coffee shop, a picture of a coffee shop will pop into my mind, and I'll go to that coffee shop, and lo and behold, there's somebody that I just, you know, I have a good conversation with them, but it seems a little more, I live in a small town, and it seems like there's, you get brought to people sometimes, so, and I think the angels do that, but I don't know how they do it, but they do it.
Well, we know there's a
order. I've had a sense that they have an incredibly expanded realm of functioning since we've had the circuitry of the internet. They seem to be able to manipulate human interaction, you know, people who find out about people who find out about people, you know, and create networks of people for various projects. And, you know, we're told in the Urantia book that that is one of the purposes of the seraphim of social architecture, to bring together teams of working individuals.
There's this beautiful quote about the there truly exists within you a conspiracy of spiritual forces, a confederation of divine powers whose exclusive purpose is to effect your final deliverance from material bondage and finite handicaps. So it sounds pretty amazing, this conspiracy of spiritual forces.
Wow. Great quote.
The language, I mean, yeah, the language.
Yeah, and that one just popped out at me, you know, just as we're talking. I'm thinking, okay, who handles that?
What paper is that from?
I had no idea. It was just written. Do you know,
Paula?
It's
from paper C4, the local universe mother spirit.
Oh, good.
What was that, paper 34?
Yeah, it's mother's paper.
Mother's paper.
Yeah, it's mother's paper. You know, we have another request for a poem, Winnie.
Oh, good. This one is For You, is the title. If I could prescribe a remedy for you, I'd give a potent... I'll start again. If I could prescribe a remedy for you, I'd give a potent dose of twist and turn you round till all your thoughts turn in prisms of dazzling light, sweeping through your mind in cosmic strands, each one a ribbon of love and trust, to float through you, her life, her mind, in every ounce of precious you.
So good.
So good.
So good. I like that.
Mm.
You know,
I have a couple.
Go ahead, Dave.
I have a couple of more attributes of the Mother Spirit. One of them is that she does, the Infinite Spirit controls energy-matter issues. And so when a universe is being created, the Creator Son might provide the patterns or the power designs, but she's the one that transfers those into material realities. So that's one characteristic of the infinite spirit. The infinite spirit is a mind god, but also an energy matter god, and also a ministry god. And then here's another attribute. She knows us. We can know her. And we can experience the beneficence of her divine influence. She has a direct and personal influence on us. Also, she participates in the bestowal of the spirit of truth and acts as its universe focus and center. She's a divine person, a marvelous being, and has creative imagination. She is love applied to creature creation. And I want to go one step farther and point out that the ministering spirits to us, we have the indwelling thought adjuster, which is a fragment of the God the Father. So the God the Father is a spiritual influence on us, indwelling our minds. And then we have the spirit of truth, which is poured out on a Pentecost. And that is the spirit of the Son, the Creator Son. So that, and then we have the Holy Spirit of the Mother Spirit also enveloping us, or which we can experience. And so that you'll find that of the Paradise Trinity, the Father, Son, and Spirit are all represented as ministering spirits to us personally as we live here on the planet. So that took care of that little list of attributes.
Wonderful. Well, we're down to our last 9 minutes. The show has once again just whizzed by. For those of us participating anyway. I hope our listeners have enjoyed it. But we probably should wrap it up, because right at the hour we just disappear off the air.
Have you got time to say a little bit more about David's book, The Introduction to the Urantia Piece?
Yeah, let's wrap this topic up and then go right to that.
And also, I would like to end with another poem by Winnie. So we want to leave some time for that, too.
Good.
So, David, tell us a little bit about the introduction, your introduction.
Yes, well, I wasn't raised in a religious, I didn't have religious training when I was young. I wasn't a church person, but I came around to through the Urantia book, actually, of realizing that God was for real. And then I realized what good medicine the Urantia book was, in my opinion. So that stimulated me to write a book titled An Introduction to the Urantia Revelation, which is in its third edition now. And what I did there was say, here's an introduction to the Urantia book. I'm going to cover topics in the Urantia book that I find interesting, and I tried to give an overview of the teachings of the Urantia book, some of the main factors, and then with lots of examples, I used lots of quotes out of the Urantia book to portray ideas and let people know what the flavor of the Urantia book is. And it's available on Amazon, and both books. The other one also, An Introduction to the Urantia, Our Local Universe Mother Spirit. Both of those books are available on Amazon. And the information is great.
Well, we thank you so much for all of the effort you put in to compile all the information you could find on our local universe Mother Spirit and the Divine Feminine. That's something that really talks to a lot of people these days. And I think
agree.
It was a very, very inspired work, and especially beautiful, you know, with the inclusion of your poetry, Winnie. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was such a treat. Go ahead,
so
David.
So I finish with one.
Oh,
with
Apple, go ahead, David, and wrap up what you were going to say, and then we'll...
I was just going to say I really appreciate Winnie's poetry, too, because I try to stay, you know, portray what the Urantia book says in kind of a factual way, and although it includes a lot of beautiful ideas, but Winnie's poetry really embellishes everything and brings the love home to roost, so to speak, which I really love. It's great.
Well, all thanks to our mother and her divine influences. We are we're totally blessed.
Absolutely. Boy, and I just have to say thank you both, and I have a sense, so much more of a sense of her. Somebody said on the board earlier, this whole show has been like a meditation on her, and that's exactly what we were hoping, and so thank you so much, you guys.
Now, is it okay with you if I give out your email address on our board to someone who would like to talk to you?
Yeah,
that would
be
fine with me.
Okay, terrific. If anybody wants information on how to reach David or Winnie, you can contact me at circle606@gmail.com. And I guess let's head to you then, Winnie, for some more of your poetry to end the program today.
Thank you. Well, David mentioned that she is good medicine in our lives. So this poem is called Good Medicine. Mm. Mother of Life, your elixirs flow, your divine potions work through our veins. Your design washes us, fills us in sweet alchemy. I pour myself into you, breath of ease, with mystic union.
We got 3 more minutes left. If you want to read a couple more.
Yeah, a couple more.
Great. This is wonderful.
Actually, can I read one?
Yes.
The mother love one?
Yes.
May we walk gracefully on your path. May we serve and create joy for those with us. May we fly entwined with angel wings towards eternity. Dance the highland fling in your universe.
Thank you. I love hearing someone else read. This is very good for me to hear.
Well, I love that one. I love that dance the highland fling.
I do too.
I love
a
blessing.
That in your bone.
Well, we have time for one more, Winnie, so.
Okay. This is called Beautiful Mystery. Beautiful Mystery, Source of Life, Great Spirit. You know all, inspire all. Trust and keep watch. It is your breath we breathe, your life in our veins. Your holy alchemy brings the gift of transformation. You add a touch of grace, a dash of mercy. Plant a lingering scent of sweetness and a generous helping of divine love.
And what a great recipe.
Indeed. Well, on that note, we're coming to the end of another show, and we would love to invite you all back to continue to discuss the topic of the daughters of God and the universe mother and the spiritual and divine feminine in future weeks. So please join us again. And thanks to our fabulous guests, David Bradley and Winnie Hunt.
Thank you, Crystal. Thanks,
Paula. Yeah, thank you, Crystal and Paula. This has been quite a treat for me.
I'm so glad. And so
come
glad
back
you guys...
again.
Thank
yeah,
you. We will.
Please do. And have a wonderful holiday coming up.
Yes. A good, great time to be grateful.
Yes, absolutely.
God bless everyone.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Until next time.
Okay.
Bye for
all
now.
All right.
Bye for now.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.